Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Driven toward right center field, high in the air. Back goes Kane to the track at the wall, and it will go. Opposite field home run for Chris Davis. He ties again for the American League lead. His fourth, scoring Ryan Healy. A salute, and it's 2-0 Oakland.
Yes, sir. Joe, low, dibs, 95.7 the game. Stacy in San Jose, who's taking that drive out to Sacramento, weighing in on the text line saying it's great to have us with you for the long drive. It's great to have you with us as we sit here and goof off for 4 hours.
It's a serious radio, Joe. I resent that.
Sorry, Dibs. Didn't mean to lump you in the goof-off category.
I've never been one to goof it out. This is a big show for me,
Joe. Yeah, don't lump me in either. So.
Oh, sorry. You too. You too, huh?
Stay off my gravy train.
You guys all buttoned up and organized today. I'm the derailer.
That's
I see
right.
How it is.
The derailer.
The balance of power shifting in here, I've noticed. This is 2 days in a row you two have aligned. Drive a wedge right between that thing in about 5 minutes. Shouldn't be too hard.
No, it won't.
Let's start with the A's. What did you like more yesterday? Crush is swinging at 3-0 pitches and going Oppo Taco. And then you got Jarrell Cotton locking down the Royals for 7 innings. Brilliant yesterday.
It's got to be the young fella, Cotton. We had Susan Sless on the show, and she talked about, you know, Cotton, what he has the potential to become. And watching him, Joe, 7 innings, the guy was just control, the poise, big moment, playing in a tough environment. This young man, he's got some potential, and he's got some good stuff. I just like his demeanor, like his approach, Joe. So Cotton
Dibs.
To me.
Chris Davis now with 4 home runs on the season. Didn't get his first one last year until, I believe, somewhere around April 21st. According to our crack staff, currently on pace for, I think it was over 80. Great factoid. Something you can really get behind there. But the upside for a player like this is the guy this organization should probably be cramming in front of everyone right now. He's not going to be a free agent for 2 or 3 more years. They've got team control on him. This is the new age Bash brother. Shouldn't this be the guy? Shouldn't this be the face of the organization?
Yeah, but you want to let it happen naturally. You know, you don't want to put too much pressure on him by throwing his face out there on every campaign. I mean, he's had a nice start to his A's career, but let's not confuse him with Mark McGwire or Jose Canseco just yet. Those are guys who had more than 400, 500 career home runs. He's had a nice little roll here. Let's keep it going. Get him to 10, get him to 20, and as he continues to advance up the charts, hopefully the A's can stay in this picture in the American League West.
Jarrell Cotton, 61 strikes on 98 pitches through 7 innings of work. He only gave up 2 hits. I know the Royals are down a bit this season, but that is an awesome performance, especially when you're on the road at Texas. Then you've got to fly Sunday, and you got to get ready for a very emotional home opener. Not just the opener of the home schedule for the Royals, but Yordano Ventura, who passed away in the offseason, there was the big tribute to him as well. So you're dealing with a lot of emotion in a game like that. 6 strikeouts, 3 walks, no runs surrendered. What's flying beneath the radar from yesterday's game, however, the 8th and 9th innings. Do you see Casilla in the 8th? Strikeout, 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 see you later. And now Doolittle gets a crack at the 9th. Got a little iffy there with runners on the corners, but then he knocks out Brandon Moss, old friend. And there you know, the team's 4-4.
Yeah.
6 outs, 6 strikeouts by your bullpen. And you look at the number of arms down there, and that's going to be the formula for this team, Joe. It's going to be really solid starting pitching. Hopefully, when Sonny Gray comes back, he can contribute to that mix. But Jarrell Cotton, Kendall Graveman off to a great start as well. And if you can keep your bullpen fresh through the early days of April and May, it's only going to help you in September.
Wins for both sides of the Bay yesterday. It's 2-0 A's in Kansas City. They're off today. 4-1 was your final for the season opener at AT&T Park as the Giants defeat the Diamondbacks to advance to 3-5 on the season. But the story is one of concern. Buster Posey, your all-star catcher and gold glove winner, 94-mile-an-hour fastball off the dome from Taijuan Walker in the first inning, who tends to pitch a little too inside for a guy with control problems. All indications immediately after the beaning are that Posey's doing well. Exited the ballpark an hour after the game. Reporters said he looked to be how he normally is, speaking the way he normally was. No high level of concern, but we saw this last year with Joe Panik.
Yeah,
Panik got beaten by Matt Moore, sure, current Giant, in Tampa, played for another week, and then was shut down for a while. Brandon Belt missed time in 2014 and 2015 due to concussions, and we all know what happened to Justin Morneau. Wins an AL MVP, and then the guy's career is completely sidetracked. How alarming is this to you right now, Dibs?
Not very alarming.
Really?
And when you look at the play, you see that it's somewhat of a glancing blow. Easy for a radio guy to say from his chair that it didn't look to be that bad, but it was a glancing blow. It wasn't one of those that hits flush on the helmet and the ball drops straight to the ground. So I think you are kind of heartened by that fact. And also the ball hit above the ear flap where there's more protection and less head, so to speak. So I feel really good about it. He'll sit out today, and I think you'll see him before the end of the week.
What do you think the approach is moving forward? Dibs with a very thorough breakdown of the helmet, the location, and the
glancing blow
of impact.
Glancing blow.
Yeah, and when you saw it, it didn't look, you know, you see the 95 is 94 miles an hour. That's pretty fast. It's moving. But like you said, it did kind of bounce off. It wasn't like just to hit that dink and it's just solid and it stops. The body in motion tend to stay in motion. So it did hit and continue in motion. So it was glancing. He, you know, knocked him down. He got up. But I think that he's going to be all right. Didn't hit him, like you said, in the ear or the chin or, you know, like by the eye. So it's on top where that helmet's there. So I think he's going to be okay, Joe. I don't think this is going to turn into some 2 or 3 week deal like those other guys with Panik going to end up happening to him. But it was still a big loss because you're like, oh, my God, especially when it happened in the first. You're like, he's a big part of this team. And you knew that they were going to need him. And unfortunately, they were able to pull off that win still.
Do you sit him tonight? Do you sit him for multiple games? How do you approach him moving forward? Dibs says he's out tonight, and then you can probably work him back in if it looks good.
And that's what the skipper said. They interviewed Skip. The Skip said, yeah, we got him out of there, and he seemed fine, and we thought he was okay, but we didn't want to take any chances. Our doctors are going to make sure that, you know, it's Posey. They're going to make sure that he's okay. So you heard this, you know, the skipper's post, you know, after the game, his post conference. So he, you know, they're going to look at him and keep a close eye on Posey. But I think that he's going to be fine. I don't know the day they're sitting him out. And I think this guy will be back in the lineup.
Matt Moore, all three runs on that swinging bunt. What a clown show defensive effort from the Diamondbacks. What else do you say about that? That was awesome. Parker scores from first base on a swinging bunt. Have you ever seen anything like that? I'd have to imagine I have.
Yeah, you have, and you see it sometimes. The pitcher trying to do too much. Taijuan Walker again, and he threw inside there too. Wild throw home, and then the catcher throws it all but through Walker's glove, but they gave the catcher the second error on the play, and Parker comes all the way around from first to score. Just a hilarious play, and you know that's baseball right there. If you're not watching that one play, you missed out on three of the four runs they would score.
That was it. Parker did a phenomenal job, Joe, because when he slid in front of him. And so it looked like the catcher had a bad throw. The ball wasn't that of a throw. But the way that Parker slid, he was astute enough to say, let me kind of get wide when I'm sliding. And so he couldn't see the ball really location. That's why I shot by him.
Nice to see him break out yesterday. First hit of the season, got on base via a walk as well. Special shout out to Nick Hundley coming into that game cold yesterday. Called a great game with Matt Moore, who went 8 innings, giving up just 3 hits and a run, 5 strikeouts and no walks. Nick Hundley with a big effort. That looks like a really important signing that took place for, I believe, 1 year, $2 million back in late January. From the 415 on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line, hey guys, a kid from my daughter's school is throwing out the first pitch for the Giants tonight. He's battling cancer. Can you give a shout out to Ben Lauer from Pinole? Thanks, guys. We got your shout out right there.
Awesome.
Good luck with the first pitch tonight. Don't overthink it. Just have fun with it.
Yep.
No one's there to judge. You're not 50 Cent. Just let it go. Really can't be worse than that, right?
Just let it go.
Nice and easy, let it go, and enjoy the moment.
Absolutely.
Get to be down there on the field at the ballpark. It'll be a beautiful night for you.
Only God can judge me.
What do you do with that? You just play the...
Nicely done. Thank you, Joe.
Nicely done.
Now back to Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
John Morosi, MLB insider for Fox Sports and the MLB Network. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. He's joining Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. John, good morning. In this day and age we live in now, with the research and the data we have on concussions in all sports, how do you see the Giants moving forward with Buster Posey after he took that 94-mile-an-hour fastball off his dome yesterday?
Well, very, very carefully, certainly, they will be with Buster Posey. I think Bruce Bochy made a very good point after the game last night and talking about how he handled it, saying that, listen, especially with a catcher, you do not want to risk that foul tip to the mask later in the game, which can really, obviously, add to the impact of that first blow to the head by the baseball. So I think we're going to see the Giants be extremely cautious, as they should be. And I think in general, guys, I'll make this point. We're at a stage in our sports conversation where concussions are appropriately regarded very seriously. The challenge that baseball has is that there is not a fluid substitution method where you can take a player out and get him evaluated and put him back in. You have to basically do that on the field, unlike football, unlike hockey. And so I think that presents some challenges. Now, obviously, we have fewer circumstances like this in baseball than we do in football or hockey. But they do come up, as we saw yesterday with Buster. And I think back to the 2012 World Series at AT&T when Doug Fister took that line drive off his head on the mound in very early in that ballgame. That was a very important game, clearly. And, of course, he stayed in that game rather remarkably. So I think that it's a time in the sports world, guys, where concussions are regarded very seriously. And the Giants, I am sure, will be very cautious with Buster. So I would say I would be very surprised if he plays today.
John, with all the tinkering that Rob Manfred is talking about doing with the game, has this idea come up at all, the idea of a concussion substitution where a player, in Buster's case, could go out in the first inning, get checked out, and maybe come back in later in the game?
It's a great question. It really is a great question. I think that it's something that if they have not considered already, I'm sure they will at this time. Because I think especially with catchers, I think you have to be very mindful. Not to say that they should be any more cognizant with one position than the other, but especially because of the really damaging potential of rapid concussive blows from two straight foul tips that really rock a catcher's mask in a very short period of time. I think you have to be very vigilant about it. And listen, a lot of the changes we have seen MLB undertake, whether it was the different rules at second base governing sliding there, whether it was the home plate collision rule. Of course, we had that conversation involving Buster years ago as well. But when you talk about player safety and truly protecting the players on the field, I would argue that in this instance, the concussive or potentially concussive foul tips to a catcher's mask may actually be more in number than the potentially damaging collisions at home plate that result in serious injury. I think that is a much more everyday occurrence, especially when you think about how much more velocity we are seeing from pitchers. And we are seeing at this time, guys, more triple-digit fastballs, really every year setting a new record. High 90s fastballs are now commonplace. You got multiple relievers on every team throwing that hard. That environment, if you're really going to talk about player safety in its totality, I think you really do, to your question, have to consider the possibility of at least a temporary substitution for a concussion protocol. I think that it's something certainly the union would support because it's really a player safety issue. And I really think from an MLB standpoint, it is really worth putting a lot of thought and really serious consideration behind.
Well, I know this is early. The season's early. I know we're just starting with two games, two series in it. The Giants, when you watch them and you see the fourth inning, that was, of course, the pitcher overthrown and all the things that happened. Three runs came in. But if you look at the Giants, the bats, well, in your opinion, is this going to be a problem this year, or do you seem to think it's just too early to kind of tell?
Well, I think that it is a concern. And I am surprised that it has become as much of a concern as it has, because I looked at this team in spring training and thought they were going to score runs. I thought that once Pence and Panic were able to show a degree of health in spring training, I was very bullish on what this team could do offensively. I think one concern right now is the top of the lineup. And obviously making sure Span can get in there on a daily basis is one thing. And then beyond that, the production. We've seen Gorky Hernandez get a number of starts up there already. But I think when you don't have that really good rhythm with your leadoff man, as the Giants had with Pagan for so many years when he was healthy. I think it's really kind of hurt that continuity up at the top of the lineup. So I think we'll eventually see the lineup click in. There's too much talent there for it not to. Left field, of course, continues to be a concern, and maybe they'll address that as the year goes along. But I am surprised, and I certainly it's too early to make drastic moves at this stage of the game. But I think for this team, you've got to give it maybe another couple few weeks and then decide, okay, what are the priorities going to be entering and approaching the trade deadline? Because the rotation, I think, is really good, one of the best in baseball, and will continue to be that way, especially you saw Moore get out and have a good outing yesterday. But the lineup, I think, you assess it probably for another week or two by the end of April. You've got a pretty good gauge of maybe what your priorities are going to be at the deadline.
John Morosi, MLB insider for Fox Sports and the MLB Network with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. You touched on left field there for a moment. The team went out and signed Melvin Upton just a few days ago to a minor league contract. Is that a big sign to us that they are very concerned about what goes on right now in left field? Because generally with Boach, you see patience when it came to Lincecum. You saw patience last year with the ninth inning role. This was a pretty quick move to get some depth in there at that position.
Yes, that's a very good point. And you look at the big picture, too. If the rest of the lineup were hitting, then I think you're not as concerned about carrying a more developing or inconsistent bat in left field. They were able to have Juan Perez and Gregor Blanco playing there in massive World Series games because they were getting enough production elsewhere in the lineup. When the rest of your lineup is not doing what it's supposed to from the standpoint of the bold-faced names up and down the lineup, whether it's Pence or Belt or Crawford, I mean, the guys they're really relying on, when those guys are not maybe at their peak level for a particular period of time, that's when the conversation gets magnified about, okay, where is this other weak spot that we can actually address? Because when you look at the Giants lineup, big picture here, how many spots can you really tinker with right now based on guys that you've already got in place or signed a big contract? There are not that many spots where you can really adjust as the year goes on. Left field is one of them and has been, frankly, for a number of years. So Melvin Upton really did struggle with the Jays in the second half of last year. Of course, he was released at the end of spring training. But if there's any solace for the Giants here, Upton did play well in the first half last year with the Padres. So he has some experience in that division. He knows the pitching. He knows the ballparks. So if there is a spark catch for him, I think San Francisco is actually a pretty good place for that to happen.
Looking at the A's and their plucky little start at four wins in their first eight games, do you think that they're going to have enough pitching to really last through the hitter-friendly months of the summer?
I'm concerned about it, but I got to tell you what, Jarrell Cotton yesterday, wow, what an outing. I mean, that is the Royals' home opener, and he dealt. I mean, that is a promising young arm. There's a lot of youth in that A's rotation. I think the key thing for them is that eventually they need for Gray to come back and give them innings and be who he was in the past. Because we've talked about this before, the oldest starting pitcher, the oldest by age pitcher in the A's rotation is Andrew Triggs. He's the senior citizen of this rotation by age, which is amazing to say, but it's true. So they've got such a young group. Graveman certainly pitched opening day, has been good, two starts for him. I was very impressed by Cotton. Manaea, obviously consistency and command is a big question for him, and certainly Alcantara is just really establishing himself as a major league starter as well. So I do have concerns, but I've been impressed by Graveman. I've been really impressed by Cotton as a young pitcher who comes over. He gets traded last year, which is a big disruption in your life as a young player, and has handled it impeccably well. So I'm really impressed by Cotton's demeanor and his stuff. Graveman's been solid as well, but again, I do have those concerns, especially with the Angels playing better than we expected them to. And the Astros, certainly their rotation, maybe the back end is a little inconsistent, but I do like what I've seen from the likes of Keuchel and McCullers there in that very same division.
John, it was Jarrell Cotton in the bullpen in terms of run prevention yesterday in Kansas City, but the run support for the A's came from none other than Chris Davis. Gets the green light on 3-0, goes Oppo Taco for the only runs of the game. That's his fourth on the season. He hit 40 last year. Are we seeing a breakout from a player? Are we seeing one of MLB's next big stars emerging into that spotlight type role?
We are. And in fact, just today, I'll share this story with you. I told my producers this morning at MLB Network, we got to talk about this guy more. I mean, he's that good. I mean, he really is. You talk about the 40 and 100 season. in that ballpark, the ball, as you know, doesn't travel all that great at night on the East Bay there. And he was, I mean, 40 home runs there speaks for itself. And he's off to another great start this year. He is one of the guys, and I believe he's among the top 5 or 10 in the Major League Baseball in terms of at-bats per home run since he debuted with the Brewers back in 2013, I believe it was. I mean, he has been, per at-bat, one of the most effective power hitters in the sport, not just last year. Right? This has been a period of years for him. So with Davis, I've been very impressed with his overall approach, his demeanor. Again, I've been very impressed by him overall. And when you think about Healy, who I know has tailed off a bit the last few days, but they've got a chance to have a really legit 3-4. And Davis, to me, is as a player, as we talk about where the A's are at as an organization, I just truly hope for the A's and their fans that things line up right in terms of a new ballpark and where he's at in his service time clock, that he's able to be maybe that first player that's really extended long-term because the A's have clarity about where the ballpark situation is going. I really hope that he's that guy. Because he's coming up now, I think, 3 years or so of service time, which has obviously in the past been around the time Donaldson was when he got traded. I hope for his sake and for the team's sake that Davis becomes that guy that gets the extension, that stays, because he's a guy that if I'm an A's fan, I am excited to watch it for a very, very long time.
MLB Insider for Fox Sports and the MLB Network. Follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. John Morosi with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Thank you, John. Dynamite stuff as always. We look forward to catching up again soon.
My pleasure, and thank you for bearing with the ballpark sounds here in Detroit around me for day baseball in the Motor City. So thanks so much for bearing with me as the sound system booms during Tigers BP.
No, we love that. We love that. It adds a little flavor to the interview.
That's right. My pleasure. Thank you.
See you, John.
Now back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Plenty of hoops conversation to get to in about 13 minutes at the top of the hour, 7 a.m. But for now, welcome in. Great to have you, Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. The NFL, in a couple weeks, is expected to release the 2017 regular season schedule. Always a great moment, because the first thing you do, start circling primetime games, start circling travel spots that you want to hit, start circling possible wagering opportunities like last year's Raiders at Chiefs Thursday night, which was just a disaster. There you go, for the Raiders to be put in that situation. But yesterday, a bit more under the radar, the preseason schedule came out. The Niners, 4 games will be as follows: at Kansas City, home against Denver, at Minnesota in the ever-important Week 3, and then home against the Los Angeles Chargers. The Raiders will be at Arizona, home against the Rams, at Dallas in the ever-important Week 3, and then home against the Seattle Seahawks. Since 2011, the streak remains. You're not going to see the Raiders play the Niners. Can someone please explain to me why we have not reached a point as a society where we can put this game back on the schedule? New York, the Giants, and the Jets play every year. Every year. Not only that, they call it the MetLife Bowl. They hype it up, and it's played in Week 3. The most important of the 4 preseason weeks, because that's when the starters get their most burn. That's when a lot of jobs are won and lost. The beauty of it for the Jets and Giants is that you're playing in your home stadium. You don't have to travel. The most important of the preseason games is set up for you to play in a comfortable environment. Meanwhile, Week 3 for the Niners is all the way in Minnesota. Week 3 for the Raiders is all the way in Dallas. Dibs, help me out. Why can't we get to the point where these two play each other, make life easy, cost less money, draws more attention?
Because we, I think, as a Bay Area society, are not yet to the point where this is a good idea. You go back to the game in 2011 at Candlestick with 2 shot, 1 beaten at the game, and the amount of violence that broke out in the stands, in the parking lot, in the bathrooms, for crying out loud, is alarming. It's appalling, and sadly, I don't think that we as a Bay Area fan base are in the place right now where it's still a good idea. Maybe with the 49ers' morale improving and the Raiders stabilizing as a good team, maybe next year, maybe you do it one time before the Raiders move to Las Vegas, but traditionally, over the past few years, I think it's a good idea they've stayed away.
Do you think it helps matters that the Niners are no longer at Candlestick, now in Santa Clara? Does that soften it at all, though?
It's unfortunate, Joe. I think that it's unfortunate because I think these two teams should meet every single year, whether it's preseason or regular season. So both these organizations has too big of a fan base. It can be something that is turns into something great. You want to see this matchup. And being in Santa Clara, maybe it helps it out a little bit, but they need to maybe enforce more police officers. But it's just too bad that they don't have these two teams, especially in the Bay Area, playing against one another.
888-957-9570. Why can't we have this game? Are we really not capable as a community of putting this on? New York can play New York. The Giants and the Patriots get together every year. Boston and New York, I think it's 9 straight years now, will play each other during the preseason. Yet San Francisco and Oakland cannot play a game against one another. It's sad, is it not?
It is
sad. Kind of embarrassing.
I think it's a little bit embarrassing, but I think we will get to a point where it happens again. It's just, right now, they're still trying to get some distance from what happened at Candlestick. And to answer your question, yes, I think leaving Candlestick helps to mitigate some of it. Certainly, Candlestick, for a number of reasons, is more conducive to that activity, much more of a widespread tailgate situation, whereas Levi Stadium doesn't have quite the same level of tailgating. I would be, though, concerned over, you know, the Raider fans being at Levi Stadium and there being just animosity. The fan bases have so much dislike, so much hatred. It's even stronger than the A's versus Giants. I think fan base battles. This one at times is cultural. It can be racial. It certainly is geographic in many ways. And so, yeah, Joe, it's just not in everyone's best interest to get together and do that.
888-957-9570. I don't know if it's helpful or hurtful. My perspective is being someone who's moved here. It amazes me. It absolutely amazes me that of all places in the United States, and I've lived in almost every region imaginable, this place cannot have two football teams get together. New York, you got to be kidding me. They can do it every year. You can throw a lot of teams on the East Coast together. In Florida, you'll always see Jacksonville, the Bucs, and Miami, just for logistical purposes, match each other up. But here, I understand the reasons why. It just, it astonishes me because, you know, college football, the passion,
right, the
isn't
rivals
as great here. People get outdoors. People tend to be so much more laid back except for this. And then it's ramped up to a level of more intensity than anywhere else you find in the country. They're that passionate about their teams.
And the passion.
Or is it more passion towards the hatred towards one another?
It's both. And I think part of it is, you know, the passion toward the brand mixed with a propensity to act out. And it's not everybody.
Of course.
Obviously, it's not all fans, but you get a small group of fans together, fans who might be looking for trouble on that particular day. And Niner fan or Raider fan, the opposition is oftentimes an easy target, especially when that fan's maybe on the road, trash talk, alcohol, etc. And unfortunately, violent acts have happened far too often.
Does it concern you at all? Because this is a game where preseason is more affordable. So for certain families, this would be the opportunity where you could get the kids out, perhaps over a regular season game. Does it concern you, though, that in an environment like this, should you bring this game back, the violence, you might not want a 4-, 5-, 6-, 8-year-old around to see that play out?
Yeah, it does concern you. But the worst thing about this, Joe, it's not about the teams. It's not about the players. It's about the swag and it's about the uniforms. It's about the colors, the red and the black and the fans, how those fans perceive who they are when they put on that jersey and who those people are when they have those different colored jerseys. And it brings about guys that say something, oh, what's set and all this different things. And it turns in not even about the football game. It turns into something just about these colors and these different teams. And it's too bad because this fan base and these two teams should be playing against one another. And it's too bad you got a couple knuckleheads that are taking in their own matter, their own hands, and causing disturbance, and which is causing it, we're ruining it for everyone. Because I believe that these two fan bases can get along, and they can compete against one another.
John, Benicia, are we capable as a community of bringing this game back, or do we still need to keep it off the schedule?
I think we need to keep it off the schedule. And I think what's hurt this game is that they both haven't been good at the same time. So there's always that little brother versus big brother. But also you have, you know, Oakland versus San Francisco, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon versus Chardonnay. I mean, I think that it's, you know, it's cultural. But I think the thing that's killed it is that if they were both 10-6 the year before, then I think it would be okay. But I think it's just a gloating ego thing with the fans.
So is it because the one team is better than the other, or if you have two teams that are winning, it kind of takes away from the fan base and focuses more on the product on the field?
I think it's the fact that, you know, hey, we're better than you. We've always been better than you. You know, we have the five Super Bowls, and you guys were good in the 70s. But now that the Raiders are back on top, it's, you know what? We've waited 20 years to beat the hell out of you. And I think that's the issue.
Excellent points, John. Thank you for calling the program. Michael in San Leandro, are we capable as a community of bringing this game back and putting it on the schedule?
I really don't think so. I'm an old Raider fan, and I've been to the Raider preseason games. And you see the problems before the game out in the parking lot and in the stands. It's the guys with the gangster stuff, with the bling-bling, and one of them gets licked, all of them get liquored up, and one of them says something, so the other guy's going to do something, and they yell and scream at the other fans as women. They get in their face. I've seen it all, and I just, you know it's going to happen again, so I'm all for let it go. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for the phone call. Concerns?
Yeah, it got to be. You're right, Dibs. It's crazy, though, because It is the guys that use the colors in the jerseys for their own agenda. It's not necessarily the game, I really believe, because there's a lot of fans, like the ones that are calling, they see it, and they're saying, no, those aren't the people that are out fighting. And like, you know, like I always say, if you can't get along, Dibs, might as well get it on.
Might as well get it on. And it reminds
me. Where's that? Is that Matthew? Or is that Luke? Where's that in the good book?
It's in the Old Testament. It says an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And so what that meant.
You had to ask, didn't you?
I was intrigued.
Okay.
He's kind of hot when you throw these things his way. I'm wondering how far I can push it before I ever stump him. And he's been hot.
Stump the preacher? I like him.
That's the Old Testament.
Bootleg preacher, so from what Mason Testament. Says, though. Bootleg preacher.
Bootleg, but that was the Old Testament. The New Testament, that's when the lamb was slain. So that's when it wasn't an eye for an eye anymore. Just wanted you to know, brother.
We having shawarma today? Is that what's going on?
It's great stuff.
I don't see the spit anywhere in here.
Genesis. What time is it, Joe? What time is it?
Exodus coming up in 3 minutes at 7 o'clock. Exodus. Joe Lowndes, 95.7 The Game. Leo, Union City, thank you for calling the program. As a community, are we capable of bringing Niners Raiders back to the preseason schedule?
Yeah, so during the preseason, I think the difference, I was at both games, by the way, the last one in Candlestick and the one in Oakland, and the biggest difference is that you're right. One team isn't good. The other one's bad. The other one's good, and so on. And you end up having a crowd of folks who get access to usually very expensive football tickets during the preseason that normally don't go to games, and they use it as a time to party and to get drunk and to cause chaos and to let it all out. And unfortunately, in the preseason, that's what you end up with. I mean, maybe if they were both good, people would want to go, but. Last time I went, it was dangerous. I had to carry my son out, and luckily there was Niner fans that were very nice. We were taking him down in Candlestick during the escalators at that time, and I heard gunshots.
Oh, man.
It was chaos. It was chaos, but there was very nice fans around me. When I was sitting down, some guy came up to me and said, "You're lucky you're with your child, or else I would whoop your ass," right? And they had – the security was very lax back then. I remember seeing people with cases of beer literally getting through the gates at that time in the last Candlestick game, and they were just bringing it in, and they were throwing beers throughout the stands. I mean, they weren't buying them. They had cans and beers just going out from their cases inside the stadium. And it reminded me of, like, an old A's 80s game or something, you know, where you're sitting on the hill and everyone's getting waved
totally
out.
Leo. Hey, thank you. I hate to cut you off, Leo, but we're up against the top of the hour. That's a great phone call.
We will keep this going if you weigh in. 888-957-9570. As a community, are we capable of bringing Raiders Niners back to the preseason schedule? Here's one of the issues, some might say, from the 408. Can't get along because Raider fans are Neanderthals. Raider fans, are you the problem? Or is it the Niner fans? 888-957-9570. We're back in a minute. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Bob Melvin is the manager of your Oakland Athletics, and he is joining Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Bo Mel, thank you for your time this morning. How's life on the road?
Good, after yesterday. I mean, it's always nice to get a win before an off day, so Jarrell Cotton and Chris Davis made that possible.
Those were going to be our lead questions. You're kind of stealing the thunder from us, Bob. We're not sure where to go from here. Let's start with Jarrell Cotton. A lot of hype for the youngster coming into the season. We know there's a lot of potential, but yesterday, 7 innings of just dynamite baseball. In all your years playing, managing, being around the game, does he remind you of anyone, his style of play?
Well, he's kind of unique in how he goes about it. I don't know if there's anybody in particular. Some have said Tom Gordon, who I played with here in Kansas City for a while, with the kind of deceptive and kind of catapult over the top delivery. But this is a true four-pitch mix. And the way he went about it yesterday in a difficult atmosphere to pitch in was borderline spectacular. So kind of sky's kind of the limit for this young kid.
Bob, I couldn't agree with you more. Just his demeanor. A cool, calm, and collective. Are you kind of shocked that a young pitcher can come and take a mountain, especially in hostile environments, and still perform at that level? What is it about him that you say, okay, I have a chance to coach greatness, to teach greatness?
Well, I'll tell you, it was, for me, the most impressive thing is how composed he was right away. You know, usually, and there was a big ceremony yesterday, Kansas City and the Royals did a terrific job in the tribute and the ceremony, and then it's a full house, and for him to go out there in the first inning and look like he was in the fifth inning and in his rhythm already, that was probably the most impressive thing for me. And he carried you out through 7 solid innings. So difficult atmosphere to pitch in, like I said, and he did it really well.
What's it like for the team, Bob, having one game, then an off day, and knowing you got to come back for 2 more in a city? Is it a little bit unsettling, like it's a one-gamer and then a 2-game set?
Well, not really, based on the fact that I think we had 8 games to start the season without an off day, and usually you have an off day pretty early. So I think the guys kind of welcome it to an extent. Now, like you said, then they come up and play 2 more night games, and we play a night game here before we go home, and we'll get in late. But that's not ideal. But I think the fact that we played 8 in a row would suggest it's probably time for a day off.
2-time Manager of the Year Bob Melvin with Joe Low and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. You mentioned the Yordano Ventura tribute before the game. Take us through something like that. How tough is it to experience that with your players, with the Kansas City fans? And at the same time, do you ever try to use situations like that as maybe examples or life lessons for the younger players about how precious and delicate life can be?
You know, I didn't really need to. I think the Royals did such a great job with it yesterday that everybody felt that. You could kind of sense the emotion that there might not be a dry eye in the house, at least, you know, during that ceremony. So I think guys will reflect on that and say, look, there's real world stuff, and then there's baseball and then the entertainment business and what we do. So after something like that, it's up for us to go out there and entertain, because it was pretty emotional. Like I said, a lot of sad people. So, you know, once the game started, guys just kind of settled in and being there and entertaining for the fans. And it ended up being a really good game that went down to the last pitch.
It was very entertaining for A's fans, allowing just the 3 hits. You've had 4 victories, 2 saves, Casilla and Doolittle each with 1. Are we starting to get an idea of what you plan for the back end of the bullpen, Bob? Are you going to continue to mix and match based on who the hot arm is?
Well, you know what, it's not as complicated as a lot of people are making out to be. I think the fact that Ryan Dole was in the 9th inning, the 1 inning, kind of threw a loop into it. You know, he was hot and up, and we'd used quite a few relievers those first 2 games. So, you know, he had struck out the same 3 guys the night before, and based on the fact that he's hot, we threw him out there. But it's basically going to come down to a Casilla Doolittle matchup thing. And before the game yesterday, I explained to him that if it was the bottom of the order in the 8th, that would be Casilla. If it was the top of the order in the 8th, it would be Doolittle. So they knew before, you know, the 8th and 9th inning started who was going to be out there, and they both pitched well enough to, you know, nail it down for us.
How well is Chris Davis seeing the baseball right now?
Well, he's seeing it pretty well. I mean, to go off of yesterday at the ballpark when it was pretty windy out there and didn't seem like the ball was flying too terribly well is impressive. But when you've seen Chris enough, you know, you kind of expect those type of things. And, you know, last year got off to a really slow start based on the fact that he was in a new league and a new team. And now he's off to a hot start. So there's no telling what he can accomplish. Hit 42 home runs last year, and I know he's always striving to get better. So pretty exciting to watch this young man hit.
Bob, when you talk about hot start, slow start, at what point can we really determine that? Because you're, what, 7 or 8 games in for most of the regulars, and You've got five guys hitting under 200. When do we start to look at that and really see that maybe it is a cool start or a hot start for another guy?
I think it's just, you know, you have to at least wait a couple weeks to see, you let guys settle in. And I really like our lineup. I think that we're deep in our lineup, and, you know, confidence-wise, it gives us the confidence to know that every inning we have a chance to score. You looked at yesterday's lineup, and, you know, 7, 8, 9 was Yonder, Plouffe, and Rajay, and they had the best numbers off of Kennedy yesterday. So I think it's a real deep lineup. We may not dominate, you know, with a couple of guys in the middle, less Chris Davis, but I think everybody has a chance to do well. And I think, you know, all in all, you know, we have some guys that have not swung the bat like they did in spring training, but they definitely have the capabilities, and I think we'll be a lot better offensively than we were last year.
Two-time manager of the year, Bob Melvin, with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. How is everything progressing with Sonny Gray?
Sonny's good. I mean, he's chomping at the bit to get out there, so we're taking a little bit slow with him based on the fact that, you know, he had the same injury last year, but threw the ball really well. His next time out, he'll throw to hitters, and then hopefully he'll be off to the races and doing rehab assignments. You know, if we're still kind of looking at a 1st of May type situation, I think we're comfortable with that, and hopefully we don't get any setbacks, and getting him back to the rotation will be a big boost for us.
And when he does go out on rehab, is it just a case where he's going to go to AAA and get a couple of starts just to get his innings up, or is there another plan in place for Sonny Gray?
I mean, Stockton's a place where it's easy to, you know, especially if we're home, for him to start. And then once you get a little bit deeper and you're thrown close to, you know, closer to 75 pitches or so, then you want the competition probably to be a little bit higher, and that would suggest Nashville. So we'll probably see both those places for him coming back to our rotation. And like I said, we're eager to get him back.
Bob, how much when you're dealing with certain guys and individuals, how much is it mental when you get with a guy and say, hey, look, I know you're capable. How much is those things that you have to do as a skipper and a manager of a team, how much is that psychological when you know you see potential in certain players?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a balance between the younger guys and the veteran guys. And we have, like you said, some guys that probably aren't swinging as well as we expect them to right now, but they have some track records, and I think it's a little early to go for pep talks for those guys. I mean, they're going to settle in. We know Ryan Healy's going to hit. We know Trevor Plouffe's going to hit. So it's just letting them get into the routine. And you know, as it is right now, we haven't swung the bats the way we feel like we're capable, but we're still 4-4. The bats are going to heat up for sure. But it's kind of a balance with when you go to guys, and certainly if it's a younger guy or a veteran guy, you kind of direct the talk a little differently.
You mentioned Sonny and possibly making a start in Stockton. A.J. Puck, the first rounder for you guys this past year, he was mowing down the opposition last night. Obviously, you have a ton on your plate with the big club, but do you have time to monitor at least some of those news and notes that are coming out of the system throughout the season?
Guys that are going to be in the big leagues pretty soon, and we really feel like this is the start of an upward trend for us after a couple of down years. And we watch very closely the Matt Chapmans and the Franklin Barrettos and the A.J. Pucks, Alton Jeffries and the Logan Shores and all these guys from pitching in A-ball all the way to AAA. Our staff monitors this every day. So we have good communication within our system, you know, from Keith Lippman, our farm director, to our front office, to our major league coaches, and to our minor league coaches. So I think that's one of the strengths of the organization. And I feel like this is going to be, like I said, an upward trend for years to come here.
Bob Melvin, the manager of your Oakland A's, with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Thank you so much for your time, Bo Mel. Keep up the great work. It's an awesome start to the season so far.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
The Warriors tomorrow night conclude the season before we get the playoffs started on what some are predicting is Saturday, Sunday at the absolute latest. The Portland Trailblazers are the ones on the schedule. How should Steve Kerr handle Wednesday night? How do you see him handling Wednesday night? Everything's locked up. There is literally nothing to play for. If you're a young team with no playoff experience, maybe you want to see a little bit of cohesion, take this last opportunity to get some reps. But do you really want to put Draymond, KD, Steph, and Clay out on the court against the Lakers in a meaningless game Wednesday?
Yes, I think you do. You want to put them out there knowing that they're not going to play again until Saturday. And for Clay, for example, if you don't play him, that would be more than a full week without him getting any game action. I think you go through the first half with your normal rotations, your normal minutes, which means Steph plays the first quarter, comes back in at about the six-minute mark of the second quarter, so he'll get basically 18 minutes. And then the third quarter, you bring the starters out for one last stint. You give them their usual third-quarter minutes, and then that's it. Much like you did yesterday, you go into straight shutdown mode, and it's McCaw, McAdoo, McGee, Clark, and Zaza the rest of the way.
As a player, how does this affect you mentally, knowing you're stepping onto the court and all you need to do is survive 48 minutes before it matters again? Does that screw you up? Do you start thinking about the potential of being injured?
It's nowhere in the world that I played a preseason game like I played a regular season game. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, is a preseason game for the starters. It's rehearsal, getting ready for the playoffs. You heard Steph. Steph said, we'll get a couple of minutes. And you look at it, he said, because you're trying to you're thinking about the playoffs. You're ready to change that gear. There's no way that Kerr plays these guys past the first half, not the starters. I don't see it happening.
Kevin Durant and Steph Curry stepped onto the court for the first time together since February 28th. Steph actually ended up having a monster night despite not playing at all in the fourth quarter. What do you think about their cohesion moving forward? Early on, they both admitted to the fact that there was a little bit of tentativeness, but they seemed to knock that rust off, Dibs, in like 2-3 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not concerned at all. I think once you get back into the rhythm, and it's tough because Klay wasn't on the floor, so you didn't really have your regular starting five with Zaza and Draymond and Steph, KD, and Klay in there. So you really can't tell how cohesive they were. But when you look at the way KD played early in the year, the way he fit in immediately with how they're doing, and take the opening night loss to San Antonio out. That was the Spurs team that came in and just motorboated Golden State. But other than that, there's been no problems with chemistry that I've been able to see, and I don't expect there to be any now.
If Matt Barnes is unable to go for the first round of the playoffs against Portland, is that going to have a major impact on this team? He wouldn't be playing a lot of minutes, but does that force someone else into additional minutes that you might not necessarily want to see in a series against the Blazers that many feel has the possibility of wrapping up within five games?
Yeah, a lot of people think it could be, you know, five games and maybe even, you know, maybe four. But I think that you got McAdoo, you got a lot of other guys that can play and play at a high level if you don't have Barnes. But I really believe this team wants to get through the playoffs as fast and as fast as they can. So you're going to see Iguodala, all those guys, their minutes is going to be up. But this team, for some reason, they know how to turn it up during the playoffs, and I don't expect anything less. So, yeah, if Barnes is injured, can Barnes help this team? Yes. But are they going to miss a beat? To me, no.
Barnes is a bit player in this whole thing, and the fact that he's gotten so many minutes was because Kevin Durant was out. And remember, if KD never got injured by Gortat slinging Zaza Pachulia into his knee, they wouldn't have even have signed Matt Barnes. They had Jose Calderon in. So when you think about how the Warriors saw him back in February, at the end of February when KD got hurt, it was really more stopgap guy than it was key rotation piece.
Kevin Durant is hitting 28% from deep in his last 19 games. Clearly there was a big gap in there, but is that going to be a concern moving into the playoffs? Because one of the things that's always made him so unique and so dynamic is his range as a 7-footer. Will he find that stroke? Do you find something like that against Portland?
I don't even know if he really needs to, Joe, because of the fact that he's such a ball-dominant, driven type of player that he can go to the hole. And his jump shot, he's a pure shooter, Joe. I mean, Dibs, when you see this guy shoot his friggin' 15- to 20-foot jumper, no one can even contest it. They can't alter the shot. This guy is that prolific. So when he's driving in, you're going to have doubled guys to collapse on him, and that's when those Klay and Steph and those guys on the perimeter is going to have wide open threes, because KD, when he wants to go to the hole, it ain't too many guys that can stop him.
Boston beats Brooklyn last night 114-105. The Cavaliers, without LeBron James, fall in overtime at Miami 124-101. That gives the Celtics a one-game lead for the number one seed in the Eastern Conference with one game to play. Wednesday night, Boston will host Milwaukee. Cleveland will host Toronto. The indications are that LeBron and the Stars are not going to play for Cleveland, so it appears as if the Cavs are throwing in the towel on the number one seed. Why did they push it to the max against Atlanta then over the weekend? This team strikes me as disorganized, as if they don't know what their approach is. It's like 1 minute they want the one seed and they're going to go full tilt. The next minute everyone's resting and they don't care. Do they feel like a cohesive unit entering the first round of the playoffs?
Not very cohesive at all, no. And they said that Tyronn Lue had said all along that they were going to rest guys but still try to get that number one seed. But because they've lost so much of late, he had to keep pushing his guys out there in spots to try to get that number one seed. And that's why they pushed against Atlanta, thinking, oh, if we get over the Hawks and then we can handle the Heat, we'll have this thing buttoned up. We won't have to worry about it. But there's definitely, I think, a division within the locker room. You've got LeBron James not playing because of rest, but also going to the club the night before the game. J.R. Smith at the club, Tristan Thompson. It seems like there's a disconnect between what Tyronn Lue wants and what LeBron James, the de facto GM, wants.
They're staring at a 7-game series opening round against Paul George and the Indiana Pacers. Of the 8 teams in the Eastern Conference, if Cleveland's going to go down, who's got the best shot at taking them out? Lo, I know you think they're not going to make it to the finals, but is it something that would only have to happen in the Eastern Conference final, or could they be primed for an upset right out of the gate against a team like Indiana?
They could be primed. I'm telling you, they've lost respect in the East. They was up against it. LeBron played 48 minutes against, you know, Atlanta. They were trying to win that game. Couldn't get it done. So teams now see that there's a tink in their armor. They're not dominating. So I think that this team is poised and set up for definitely a disappointment in the first round, could be second round. They are just not a buttoned-up organization. The head coach is not the guy running the team. We know who's running it. And I just don't know if this team is buttoned up enough to go deep in the playoffs. They're struggling right now.
3-2. Imagine that's the series situation against Boston, against Washington, against Indiana, whatever it may be. Cleveland's trailing 3-2. How much officiating sides with Cleveland in that game 6?
Oh, not at all, Joe.
None.
Because my good friends at the NBA officials office, the good men and women, the one woman, of course, they would never, Joe, be influenced by any outside forces to corrupt or change a professional basketball contest.
See, that's the one thing I can't get over. I can believe the idea that they could go down in the Eastern Conference Finals. I believe that there's something wrong there. I can't get past the television ratings. They're down 20% this year. The NBA's down 20%. The Warriors played a Sunday game last week against the Wizards that got outrated by the Women's Final Four. The NBA needs Cavs-Warriors. I really think if you just play your game, the officiating's going to take care of the rest. How? How could the NBA justify throwing Washington and the Warriors out there in the finals? Do you know how disastrous that would be for them in a bad year already when you are in year, what, 2 of this television contract? You got multiple parties paying you over $1 billion a year. You've had all this talk about players resting, not wanting to play primetime games, standing up for their political beliefs, drawing people away. You got to remember, when an athlete takes a political stand, he does 2 things. One, he alienates half the nation that doesn't agree with him. 2, from the pool that's remaining, he alienates a large portion that don't want to hear about politics and sports. So what's left? The people who do want to hear about politics and sports that happen to agree with them. That's a small percentage. So you've got athletes standing up for political causes. You've got players resting, superstar players resting, a new TV deal. And then we want to consider the idea that the only matchup that works for the ratings might not happen.
It might not. And how much can the officials help? I understand if it's a close game, LeBron and those guys might get the call. But you saw them the other night crying because they didn't feel they got a call. They were crying about Atlanta, said it was a bad call, said they got fouled, and the officials didn't see it. You saw them get motorboated a couple nights ago, like a week ago, and they were crying, fighting amongst each other because they weren't getting the calls. This team is struggling. They're struggling bad. And if they're getting beat, I don't think the officials can really help them. I just don't think that their timing. I know one thing that this team is missing big time. Their defense. The Cavs used to be known for defense, not allowing a lot of teams to score a lot of points. Now they get it's a pass. Tristan Thompson needs some help. You know, losing a big man, you know, losing Bogut, that was a huge blow. I know he didn't get to play, but they were expecting big money, big minutes from Bogut. Now you don't have that guy. Tristan's thumb's hurt. We're not for sure how much he's going to play. Who else do they have far as a big man that can really get it done? You look at the different guys, Jefferson, Hassan, he wanted to retire, but he's decided to come back. This guy's 30-some years old. I mean, you Richard Jefferson. So when you look at this Cavs team right now, to me, they don't look like to be the favorite in the East.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.